Windows 10, we got a launch date, and I got it running on the Raspberry Pi. NVIDIA's new Android TV Shield and the Asus ZenFone 2. We got two hands-on reviews for you, registry cleaning, and quite a bit more. All coming up next on Tech Thing. If you get something useful out of this episode of Tech Thing, please consider contributing to the show at patreon.com/techthing. We're brought to you by viewers just like you. Thanks so much.
I'm Shannon Morse.
And I'm Patrick Norton.
And this is Tech Thing, where we make technology behave.
At least on the good days. Oh my goodness. Hopefully we sorted most of the glitches with our audio from last week. Battery check.
Oh yeah, good idea.
Yeah, my mic's on
three
this
bars.
Time.
I'm good.
We're good. So, yeah, we're in the process, and we understand that the audio has been a painful thing for a lot of you. It's been even more emotionally traumatic for us. We were in the process of tuning the room, adding compression into the system. I spent several hours here on Sunday with a couple of audio engineers. We're going to get it better, I promise you.
Promise!
Speaking of which, the first HomeKit devices, which is Apple's home automation system, CNET had a great roundup that they were supposed to start shipping yesterday, but mm-hmm. the ones... I thought were most interesting, actually, which are the Elgato devices. I could not find for sale yet.
Oh.
But, you know, okay, so there's an iHome plug, Ecobee 3 thermostats, Lutron lighting kit, because we need more ways to control bulbs. But the Elgato Eve is really interesting because it's doing, you know, temperature monitoring and air quality monitoring, I think particulate mm-hmm. matter, and a lot of the sort of humidity and temperature stuff that I always thought the Quirky was supposed to do but didn't when it shipped.
Yeah.
Been a little frustrated with GE's Quirky group because they keep shipping really cool hardware without the software you need to make it run. But what's interesting about that is 9to5 Mac followed up today. They found a support document that basically says HomeKit will be the hub, the gateway for HomeKit is going to be to the Apple TV.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So there's going to be more home automation options, but they're going to be using it within a set-top box.
Yes.
Hmm, okay.
Because we need more home automation options.
Yeah, no kidding. More proprietary home automation options. That's
well,
what I don't like.
At this point, I just want them to work.
So speaking of set-top boxes, you have something that looks eerily similar to the little the little booklet that I use for all my coupons.
Yes, it is not the booklet for your coupons. This is an Android TV.
Huh.
I mean, look, just when you thought it was safe to buy a set-top box for your TV, at least if you're not waiting to see what Apple tucks into that next-gen Apple TV, because you're locked into the iTunes content environments. So the Apple TV, the next generation Apple TV, is supposed mm-hmm. to have new hardware, interface upgrade.
Oh.
Well, it's going to be interesting. That's supposed to arrive later this year.
Okay.
What we have in my hands, or what I have in my hands right now, is NVIDIA's Shield and Shield Pro, which started shipping this week.
Oh, so this is the new Shield and the new Shield Pro.
Yes, this
I believe they had built some hardware... A while back.
Well, first there was the
similar names.
Well, first there was a game controller with a giant screen,
right.
which I affectionately think of as the best way to play games in the bathroom ever, except on your phone. And then came the Shield tablet, and now there's still Shield tablets, but basically this takes everything in the Shield tablet and turns it into a set-top box.
Okay.
So this is the $199 16-gigabyte Shield. The Shield Pro will add $100 out of $299 and ups the internal storage to 500 gigabytes.
Wow.
The Shield Pro is currently on pre-order. It'll ship June 12th. So both of these run Android TV. It's an NVIDIA Tegra X1 system on a chip, four ARM Cortex A57 cores, plus four Cortex A53 cores. That's eight cores,
wow.
kids, with a 256-core NVIDIA Maxwell GPU. So, you know, compared to like the 2,500 cores in the high-end Maxwell GPUs, not so much. But it's still the same basic graphics that are found in 900 series GPUs from
it's
NVIDIA.
It's like a baby version.
Oh yeah, it's going to stomp pretty much any set-top box
yeah.
out there in terms of graphics performance. Both the Pro and the standard version come with this, which is a Shield
yeah.
controller. There's an HDMI cable in the box. Yeah.
That like never happens.
Well, no, it doesn't never happen. You can buy a more traditional remote control, like a television remote control, for $50.
Yeah.
There's a stand, should you want to actually store the thing vertically, because you're that kind of person. That's another $30.
So lots of accessories.
Yeah, so 5.1, 7.1 surround sound passes over the HDMI port. It'll support 24-bit, 192 kilohertz audio over HDMI and USB, gigabit Ethernet, 802.11ac, 2x2 MIMO on 2.4 and 5 gigahertz band. With Bluetooth
nice.
4.1, a pair of USB 3.0 ports will apparently let you add a hard drive or other accessories should you want to store a whole bunch of content locally. As you'd expect from the bundled controller, gaming is a big focus of the NVIDIA Shield.
Of course.
Duh. along with access to Google's Play Store to buy apps. The games look really, really good. Of course, in our office. It's kind of funny, like as soon as I moved this, I managed to shut it off. So in a second, there it is. So this is actually what the interface, the Android TV interface looks like. And if I press the button on the remote control, I'll actually be able, there we go, I'll be able to control it. So this big bar across the top was pretty funny. Because most of this stuff I have no interest in and never, okay, so I do watch Arrow, but somewhere else. This is kind of their advertising area. It's a mixture of stuff you already own or have access to. You can stream games, which I have had absolutely zero luck doing here in the studio. Mm-hmm. Everybody else I know has had no problem with it. But the NVIDIA grid does not seem to want to play nicely in the studio.
When you were messing with it outside of this room, were you able to use it just fine?
Yeah, and I talked to Ryan over at PC Purr. He had no problem with the Shield games. It's interesting. Let me walk through this interface because it's kind of crazy. So we've got this sort of the carousel at the top, which think of as advertising. You can stream
Netflix.
Games. Yeah, well, okay, so you can... Well, it was funny, right? So when I launched it, there was no Netflix, right? So, you know, there's, okay, Pandora was available, you know, Google Music, Google Plays, you know, movie and TVs, and, you know, okay, it's got VLC, it's got...
Google Play Games, okay.
Yeah, but Plex, which I was really excited about, Hulu was available, but there was no Netflix. So then, and the part of why I'm so irked about this carousel at the top is I searched, because I'm like, no, there's got to be an update for this. And I finally found the update. It's so funny. You keep scrolling. The update showed up over here.
Oh, at the very end.
Yeah, and then I updated it, and Netflix was available. So Netflix looks like Netflix does on anywhere else in the planet, you know.
Okay.
Big Netflix logo, launch the Netflix interface, I'll pick me instead of the kids. You know, and it's a nice, clean implementation. You know, you may want to add a keyboard into this because, you know, like everything else on the planet, if you want to search... Let's go to search. Look, kids, it's just like every other irritating remote control environment.
And I believe that the controller has an audio jack on the back here, too?
It does have an audio jack.
Okay.
Well, it's so funny. When the first round, I was playing music over it, so you can plug... Somewhere there are headphones. Yeah, you can plug your headphones into here. I had some issues streaming audio to the headphone jack on the controller when I was all of 3 feet away from this. After I updated the operating system, it seemed to work a bunch better. The controller feels good in the hand. I'm a PC gamer, not a console gamer, but it feels like a larger PlayStation controller.
Thank you.
And the graphics on the games I played look really, really good at 1080p, both on purchase games and the Shield streaming games. And I back-checked with some of my more video-y, gamey friends to make sure that they concurred on that. Really, the big feature on the Shield, it promises clean 60Hz 4K gameplay and video playback for those of you with UHD televisions, and voice control, although it's really funny. Hit, scroll all the way up to the top.
Okay.
Keep going.
Oh, click to search?
Click to search.
Okay.
And say Firefly.
Firefly. Oh, cool.
That's
okay.
Different. Try Play Firefly.
Play Firefly.
Okay, so
that's what I got.
That's
awesome.
But it's funny, but it's giving you like IMDb style information, not actually the ability to play my beloved space western.
Oh, I see. You can watch YouTube videos from it looks like Comic-Con. Hey, that's okay.
Okay, and apps that are quasi-related. It's an interesting... So. It's kind of funny, right? You know, I love the fact that it ships with Plex. I love the fact that it's got 4K support. A lot of what I noticed was a modest menu of games, though, hey, Portal's in there and services. Pandora's an option if you're not on board with paying Google $10 a month for their streaming music service. For the iTunes folks out there, the Play app setup will let you co-op your iTunes music. My big question is it worth $200? I like the feel of Android TV. It's well thought out. And for folks that don't live on game consoles, the $50 remote option would be a pretty good idea. You know, because like if I handed this to my wife, she'd be like, really?
Yeah.
But it's interesting. NVIDIA's traditionally been really good with updating Shield to the latest Android updates. Mm-hmm. That said, it's really early for this box. I sense a lot of features, and more importantly, a lot of apps will be coming to Shield at a fast and furious pace over time. You know, I like the fact that there's support for NVIDIA's Grid streaming service, which works anywhere but our studio, along with NVIDIA Game Stream. So if you have an NVIDIA-equipped PC, you can stream your games from your PC.
Cool.
Yeah, you know, if you want a box that promises a lot more than the features that are built into your 4K TV, or you want an excellent Android or Grid or Game Stream experience, I would give the Android Shield television box, Android TV box, a pretty serious look. Just be warned that if Android TV doesn't get big support, you might not get a ton of apps, But if all you want to do is stream games, you know, and get a little bit of Android action on, and you love Google Play Store environments, you will be golden.
I would seriously consider this just for the fact that I'd be able to stream my games from my PC all the way into my living room and just sit there with a controller.
Well, I mean, you could turn a $35 Raspberry Pi into
there's other options,
box,
of course.
This is going to work a lot better, and it's going to be a lot prettier.
It'd be much prettier.
It's so dense.
I kind of like it. Yeah. It looks like it's from an alien's warehouse. A warehouse.
The alien warehouse.
All right, I have something to show off as well.
I bet it's the Asus Zenfone 2.
It is, yes. This is the Asus Zenfone 2, number 2. Mm-hmm. So they did have one previously. Came out with it a couple of years ago. This is the second version of it. And the cool thing about this one is it was released in May, totally unlocked.
Good.
So you can buy it from like Amazon or wherever you want. It's a mid-range phone, so it'll be 16 gigs of internal storage and 2 gigs of RAM for $199. Now, they also have a 64-gig internal storage version with 4 gigs of RAM. Mm-hmm. So nice, big, fat 4 gigs. But that one's going to cost you a little bit more at $299. So a few of the specs of this phone, it's an Intel quad-core CPU, not like a Snapdragon.
So battery life's the big question.
Yeah, battery life is interesting. LTE, NFC, of course, Bluetooth and Wi-Fi up to AC. Mm-hmm. They do have a fast charging. And I'm going to let you take off the back of that because it always messes up my nails anytime I try to take off the back of these phones. So you can remove it with a little notch at the very bottom. The back is plastic. It's brushed aluminum look, and it comes in a couple of different colors. I got the red one. But luckily, you can remove it, and you can change it out if you want to. Interestingly enough, this 3,000 mAh battery back here, you can't remove it. You can't take that out. It's kind of just stuck back in there. So that's kind of unfortunate. Yeah. No, don't take the knife to it.
Just saying.
But they do have this pretty cool feature where you can have two different SIMs. So I currently have a T-Mobile SIM up here, and this one allows me to do 4G LTE, and then there's a 2G one down here, so you can have a second SIM slot down here. So that means that I can make a call on my first one and then put it on hold and answer a call on the second one, so I can have two lines with one phone.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. I love that they included that, and that's probably my favorite thing, especially if you travel a lot, but the second one's only 2G, so keep that in mind.
So it's more of like an international calling feature.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So I could use this when I go to Japan, for example, and just stick in a second SIM. They do have They do have a micro SD as well, up to 64 gigs, so if you know the internal memory isn't enough, you always have that second option as well. And you'll notice that they have the volume up and down buttons back here, similar to LG's phones too.
Because that's so intuitive.
Yeah. it still weirds me out when I use that.
Not a pure Android environment.
Not pure Android. It does run on Android, and you have it updated to the full version of Android, but it uses this Zen UI interface. So it's kind of interesting. They have a few different cool perks about using this Zen UI interface. If you already use Android as it is, it's pretty easy to use, but they also have a kids mode, which lets you set a pin, and then you can just protect your phone, let your kid use it, and only allow them a certain time on the phone, or only allow them to use certain apps.
This is good.
Let them access music and Netflix if you want to, and then nothing else, so that they can sit there and, you know, watch their movies without buying things on Google Play. So you're able to do that. There's also a snap view, which lets you do two pins for separate profiles for yourself.
Cool.
So you can have like a guest mode or your user mode, or you can do a business mode.
I was gonna say work mode and
a work mode and then a personal mode.
That's
a pretty interesting thing that they included too. Little feature that I've been using quite a bit is called Zen Motion. So this is another Zen UI interface thing. If I double tap on here, it'll turn it on. And then I double tap off, and it turns off. Now, and I'll have to turn this around so I can see what I'm writing, if I make a C, it opens the camera. And it takes a little bit for it to open, but it opens. Isn't that cool?
Crazy.
So I can do the same thing. Like if I type in a lowercase e, it'll open the email. If I type W or write W, it opens the web.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's kind of a neat little thing that they did. And then they have the nice display, of course. It's a 5.5-inch LED backlit full HD IPS display. It's 1920 by 1080 pixels, or 403 pixels per inch, I guess I should say. 400 nits, so you're going to get really nice brightness whenever you're walking around outside as well.
It was kind of funny. For $200, I really love the Moto G 4G LTE.
Yeah.
But that screen kicks the Moto
G's ass.
It's
a really nice screen. It's very, very bright, and it's really, really, it's big, so I really enjoy that. And then I also wanted to mention the camera. So there's, of course, the back and a forward camera. The one facing you is 5 megapixels, so pretty low. The one on the back is 13 megapixels, and that's an f2.0 wide aperture rear camera, as well as the 13 megapixels. It does take pretty good pictures, and I'll throw up some with Paul so he can show them during this. And it has a couple of different modes, like there's a light mode, like a low light mode. There's a manual mode, selfie, panorama, if you want to use the selfie panoramics to get all your friends in the picture all together. Super HDR works really well. I really like the low light version, and the panorama is kind of weird because it gets a little jolty whenever it tries to take the picture right next to you. So all in all, it's a good phone. Not my favorite because it's missing a few of those capabilities that I like. It does have the fast charging, but it doesn't do the wireless charging where you can just set it on a key charger and it charges. You would need to buy the additional, you know, thing for that. It also has a lower 13 megapixel size camera. So I would like to get, you know, one that's a lot larger than that. It's important to me.
But I think the back-end processing is so much more important than the number of megapixels available. The size of the sensor is more important. The quality of the lenses, the back-end processing.
Yeah, to
we
be honest,
argue this
with,
all day,
with
by
the
way.
Processor, just speaking on the processor, I didn't notice any lag. I didn't notice any problem switching from several different apps at the same time.
How was the battery life?
The battery lasted me all day on normal usage. If I was using it heavily, it lasted until like 4 or 5 p.m.
So like 8 to 10 hours of active use.
Yeah. So it was kind of low for me, but I'm a heavy user. So if you're a normal user, you can get a full day of battery life out of it. So just don't watch Netflix all day like I do.
That's still the challenge for Intel, is catching up to ARM in power consumption on mobiles. Good
Agreed.
Stuff.
Yeah. Pretty
so
cool phone.
Thumbs up.
Asus Zenfone 2.
Ladies and gentlemen, let us turn to Darren of Hack 5 to find out what is coming up on our favorite show about hacking this week.
Freeing yourself, or at least your data, from the clutches of Google, figuring out how to make the most out of your 4 terabyte hard drives, making art with Arduinos and Friendica plugins. That's right, open source social networks, all sorts of good stuff. You can find that on the sister show over at Hack 5.
We have a launch date for Windows 10. I repeat, we have a launch date for Windows 10. So this week's rapid fire roundup is all about Windows 10. Are you ready, Patrick?
Yes.
Let's go.
July 29th is the big day for Windows 7 and 8.1 users that are ready to upgrade to Windows 10. The upgrade is free.
Yes.
Microsoft says 4 million Windows insiders, including me, have been beta testing the technical preview. I've said it before, 10 fixes a lot of the issues that 8 brought in, including bringing back a really usable start menu and not treating the desktop as something that should be hidden before it's killed off. So if you, well, look, you know, there's the start button and look, I've got, well, I can go to all my
apps. Start menu and tiles.
Well, yeah, and I've got a power button. So, you know, yeah, you can customize the tiles. The tiles are still here. You know, someday I will play around with them, but mostly I'm just using this for work. So as you can see, though, the interface formerly known as Metro is still there, but it's more about you than Microsoft shoving a tablet lifestyle onto laptop and desktop users. get ready, number two, for Cortana and Edge and Xbox Live and Xbox App. Cortana is Microsoft's virtual assistant, and I think I like it. You'll, of course, need to get your mic on to get the full experience. You can type into it, too, but let's say, okay, Cortana's up. What's up, Patrick? I'm going to hit the mic button here. What temperature? Richmond, California. There we go. Let me try that with a complete sentence. What is the temperature in New York City? Hey, I like
that. Hey, it works.
Can I fly from Oakland to Las Vegas at 9 p.m. tonight? Oh, it's launching the Spartan browser, which is now the Edge browser. And hey, look, it's giving me, well, it's not giving me a lot, but it is at least launching me something reasonably useful. So it's kind of the Cortana seems to be at sort of the base level, like a lot of things we're looking at today. You know, it's interesting that they anticipate a lot of Edge or services and controls of applications being built into it. You know, Edge, like I mentioned, is the name of the browser that replaces Internet Explorer. And while I believe it will be more secure, I'm not so sure I care about the whole built-in, oh, you can comment on the web. So let's go to, okay, this is a Delta ad. And I'm going to click over here. And you actually like this stuff, though.
Oh, is this where you get to mark on it?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, I love this. Okay, so I think this is useful because we do a lot of tutorials and we show people websites, so I think it would be great if I can draw arrows at things and be like, you gotta click this link.
That makes sense.
It's a very use case scenario thing for, you know, podcasters. But
yeah, podcasters will love this. Well, it's interesting. Xbox on Windows 10 brings the live gaming network to PCs and tablets. You can talk to your friends on PCs and Xbox One while you're playing games. And you can stream games from your Xbox One to your PC. And,
yes,
of course, DirectX 12 ships with 10. And you can expect basically improvements in graphics.
Yes.
And some you'll see now, some you'll see in the future. Number three, consumers have less choice on a couple of things. While the Pro and Enterprise versions will let you choose what updates you install, pretty much everyone seems to believe that consumers are going to get the latest Windows updates whether they want them or not. Period. End of discussion. Windows Media Center, of course, is gone, so if you DVR using Windows PC, you will want to stick with 8. There's new apps for photos, videos, music, maps, and more. And Continuum, which tailors the Windows 10 app experience to your device. So if you start something on a tablet and plug in a keyboard, or finish a project on your desktop instead of your phone, the app is going to automatically adapt to use the hardware you have. So
I was like, Continuum, isn't that a Stargate movie?
Don't even get me started. Well, it's pretty interesting. If you're ready to upgrade to Windows 10, if you're on a phone, you're going to get it when your carrier says you can get it. For everybody else, look for this icon down here on Windows 7 and 8.1 machines. That will launch that little wee Microsoft logo down in the system tray. You'll click on it. You'll be able to reserve your upgrade, which basically says, I want it. And as soon as it's available, your machine will start downloading it. Make sure you have at least 3 gigabytes of space for it.
Yeah.
So basically, as soon as they release it, it'll start downloading and you are good to go to upgrade. Just as always, we like to say, back up your stuff before you upgrade your operating system so you don't lose it in case something was horribly, terribly wrong.
You know what I do? I put my data on a separate drive.
Good plan.
It's completely separate from the Windows, yeah.
And you
Speaking of which, that hard disk drive that I had, I had problems with the 4 terabyte on Windows. So I talked about it on Hack 5. I figured out how to fix it, but it was very techie.
Go check out Hack 5.
And if you guys have questions about Windows 10 or if you want to download it or not, let us know. Email us at techthing.com and we'll talk all about them before the 29th.
Unless you hate Windows 10 at this point, in which case, tell us that too.
Yes.
Yes. AskatechThing.com. Time for our HostGator Disruptive Tech of the Week. Let's talk about Windows 10 running on cheap hardware like the $35 Raspberry Pi 2.
Speaking of which, we got an email to AskatechThing.com from Alan. Alan wrote, I have been hearing a lot about the Raspberry Pi 2 running Windows 10 online. However, when I looked up the details, it says that you have to connect to it on a computer running Windows 10 to log onto the Raspberry Pi 2. It looks like it is being used to program the Pi to run various apps that are created in Windows 10. Do you know if they will be releasing a standalone version of Windows 10 that will have a standard desktop on the Raspberry Pi 2? Great show. I am proud to support you guys. Keep up the excellent work. Thank you from Alan.
Well, thank you, Alan.
Thank you.
Yeah, seriously. So, you know, if you've missed every time we talked about the Raspberry Pi 2, Element 14 is a U.S. distributor. This is a Raspberry Pi 2 Model B. You can pick it up for $35. You know, yes, you'll need to add a USB Wi-Fi adapter if you want Wi-Fi along with keyboard and mouse if you're going to use it as a Linux PC.
But it's awesome.
It is awesome. It is unbelievably awesome. But as a desktop, even running Linux, it's going to be slow. And that's why I think Microsoft made Windows 10 Core for single board computers like the Pi and other devices, not as desktop PCs.
Mm-hmm.
They are incredibly capable as BitTorrent sync servers, Plex, or audio streamers. We even built one into an NVIDIA streaming box and possibly unsafe. But while Core will bring Windows 10 to the Pi, seriously, it is not going to bring the Windows desktop. Not for a long time.
Aww.
Well, okay, so let's talk about Windows 10 sort of Core. This is about the Internet of Things, Microsoft's Windows Developer Program for IoT, or Internet of Things, which basically means it functions as an embedded operating system. It's pretty interesting. And I was actually kind of incredibly shocked and surprised and delighted and amazed.
Did you get one running?
I got one running. Well, I did
kind
actually.
Kind of?
No, not kind of. Okay, so this is not it running. This
is a picture.
I'd use command line to actually move the operating system onto the Raspberry Pi SD card.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're looking at right here, if you have Windows 10 running on a Raspberry Pi and you plug an HDMI cable into it, you'll get something that looks like this, which is mostly about finding out this IP address. And if you log into it remotely via the IP address, you get this.
Ooh.
Yes. There's not a lot going on here. So it shows the apps it's running, processes, you know, the devices. It
you
is.
You have one running.
I have one running.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I was pretty excited. You'll need to have a bunch of things going on to make this happen. For example, you need to have Visual Studio 2015 RC. I did the community edition in my case. You'll need to be a part of the Windows 10 Insiders Preview because you need to have Windows 10 Technical Preview installed to install all of this stuff.
Yeah.
So Windows 10 Technical Preview, mm-hmm. you'll need like Visual Studio 2015. I did the community edition because it's free. And you need to sign up for the Windows 10 Internet of Things Core Insider Edition Preview, which requires you to sign up for Microsoft Connect. So there's a few humps you have to jump over, and you download it. It's about 470 gigabytes. And yeah, well, and then you get your command line on. It was pretty funny.
Administrator mode, I'm sure.
Administrator mode, absolutely. Yeah. It was kind of funny because I'm sitting here, I was laughing because I was like, okay, the Internet of Things, Raspberry Pi, and all of a sudden I'm cutting and pasting code into a command line window to move an FFU file onto an SD card. And then, of course, it failed. I'm like, oh, I got to copy the FFU file to the System32 folder. It was, you know, I mean, it's one of those moments where like, oh, command line on Windows because, you know. It's just a strange feeling. But once it is moved onto the SD card, you stuff the SD card into the Pi, plug the Pi into the network, you wait for it to reboot, and boom!
You
laughed, but I was like, it works! I get so excited when things work these
Slightly
days.
Slightly janky, but it works!
Well, yeah, it's funny. So one of the things that happens is when you install this, it puts the Windows Internet of Things Core Watcher in there.
Oh.
And it'll tell you all the Internet of Things, Windows Internet of Things devices in there, so you don't have to like plug a, you know, HDMI monitor into your Raspberry Pi to see what's going on. You know, so it's not doing much for me right now. not because there's anything wrong with it. To actually make it do something, go to windowsondevices.com, which turns into dev.windows.com/en, well, in the United States, basically the IoT files. And if you start scrolling down, the projects are actually pretty cool. Some of the stuff that people have actually built. This kind of reminds me in some ways of the early days of Arduino, where there's lots of ideas and you're going to have to pretty manually work your way through them. Bluetooth RC car with remote Arduino, I2C port expander. I thought of you when I started looking at these. I'm like, oh, Shannon's going to go nuts. it's pretty cool.
Look at all them LEDs.
It is pretty cool. in terms of the downloads that are currently available, it's mostly about, for me, Raspberry Pi. And of course, I load up Windows 8.1 page because I'm crazy that way. It's going to be interesting. I'm not sure how universal apps are going to work on Core. The theory, of course, is that you'll write one app that'll work on desktops and laptops and phones and tablets, the Xbox, embedded devices like the Raspberry Pi. But I think Visual Studio Code is really interesting. It runs natively on Windows and Mac and Linux. It supports dozens of languages out of the box, i.e. there's tools to port existing apps from Win32, iOS, Android. It's free, although the free versions don't offer all the really cool features that the MSDN software kind of downloads stuff like the paid versions
true.
Do.
Well, I once made an app in Visual Studio. Once. It was terrible, but I did it.
You know, this will probably be less emotionally traumatic for me than it will be for you. But it's interesting. It's interesting.
It is. You know, I think I'm going to play with it.
You should.
Yeah, I think I will. Maybe I'll build some apps. I don't know.
Maybe
if I can figure it out.
Well, look, this could be an opportunity for you out there to try to pull together a new hack or a new business. If you do and you need a website, do us a favor, host it on our sponsor, HostGator.com. And if you use the coupon tech thing, you'll score 30% off any new hosting package. And you'll help support the show. And who knows what glories Visual Studio may hold for your future.
Oh, so much glorious awesomeness. Hey, we got an email from a guy named Moises.
Moises wrote, askatechthing.com, hey guys, recently I've been experiencing some errors about old applications that I uninstalled long ago. These errors lead me to believe that maybe I have some old registries that are causing some of these bugs. I am sure that a clean install of Windows would be my best choice, but I would like to explore my options. I know the longtime standing C Cleaner is an option, but I have not used it in a while. I'm sure you can help shed some light on the alternatives, and if CC Cleaner or C Cleaner is still my best option. Love the show, Moises in the Bronx, New York.
Yeah.
I hope I said that name properly.
C Cleaner, and you did. I looked it up. I Googled it. I'm sorry if your name is different, but I did Google it. So my favorite alternative to C Cleaner, which I still do use C Cleaner often. Mm-hmm. It's updated regularly, so it's a really good program. There's another one called Glary Utilities, which is over at glarysoft.com/glary-utilities. This one is also free. It's extremely similar to how you use C Cleaner, but it also includes a whole bunch of useful tools all packed into one software package. package.
Nice.
There's the free version. There's also a pro version. For myself, I just use the free one. It works great, so no need to pay unless you really need like automated right. utilities as opposed to manually doing it every time. But just set yourself a calendar, you know, notification, and you'll be set to go. But yeah, Glary Utilities. Good one.
Or reinstall your operating system every 6 months to a year.
No. Well, yeah, you should do that too.
It's kind of nice. If you're a fan of Tech Thing, make sure you subscribe at techthing.com on iTunes or youtube.com/techthing. That makes sure you get each and every episode of the show. And if you want to take it to the next level, consider contributing to the show at patreon.com/techthing. You can donate however much you want per episode, and every little bit counts and keeps Shannon and I fed and the show coming to you. If you can't donate, no worries. Please take the time to send us questions, tips, and share the show with your friends and family. Giving our video the thumbs up on YouTube, liking it on our Facebook page, reviewing it on iTunes, it all helps. And thank you, each and every one of you, so much for supporting Tech Thing.
We're back with more awesome funness with feedback, and Mark emailed us, ask@techthing.com. Hello, Tech Thing crew. In your episode 20 segment, you mentioned some options on improving smartphone camera quality. Another consideration to add would be the Sony smartphone partner. These are clip-on cameras for iOS and Android that range from point-and-shoot quality up to sensors for e-mount lenses. He also sent us a link to the Sony ones. Great show from Mark.
Thanks, Mark.
Yeah.
Yay. Yeah. First of all, glad you're enjoying the show. Second of all, thanks for the reminder on the news. These are kind of funny.
Yeah. I always forget about those.
it's partially because some of them that came out early, there was a bunch of ones from Kodak, which is not so good.
Yeah.
The Sony ones seem to work a lot better, but if you've never seen one, they're essentially, they look like a lens, except that the lens has a bracket. The bracket attaches to the back of your phone. Mm-hmm. And they're a little Rube Goldberg, because you attach it to your phone, you wirelessly control it. The reviews are really mixed. People either love them or hate them. Mm-hmm. You know, some of them are pretty expensive. We're talking like $400 or $500. I really like the idea, though. There was a professional photographer that reviewed one on Amazon. Despite the quirks, I'm a huge fan. He says, quote, "I simply do not ever attach this camera to my Samsung Galaxy S4. Ever. I see zero need for it, and I feel that it actually limits the camera's potential. I have a Wi-Fi signal. Put the damn camera where I damn well want to. Indispensable tool, a Joby GorillaPod magnetic flexible tripod, a tool that allows me to stick the QX up light poles, traffic signals, car tops and sides, metal tables and chairs, the siding of an REI building, ladders, whatever allows those magnetic feet to work, man. Put the camera where you want it. Since the QX is blessed with a standard tripod mount, it goes on to any quarter by 20 adapted product. I've seen them on boom poles. I've seen them on string. I've seen the mounted on GoPro adapters, you name it." It's a really, really cool idea, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we mentioned earlier, there's one that'll take the E-mount lenses. I like the idea of thinking of it as more of as a remote mountable camera that's easy to control.
Ah.
I gotta say, though, for the money, I would probably just buy a standard digital camera.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm personally the same exact way. I prefer to have a separate camera that has all the options, mm-hmm. everything built in, but to a separate camera.
I do like that approach. So if you have one of these laying around that you're not actually using, you know, you might start thinking of it as the strange and wondrous remote camera you never knew you had.
Hmm. Might be something to think about.
Do you have something analog for this week?
I do. So if you guys are ever wondering, if you want to, just remember, put down your laptop, take away that cell phone, just put it away for a while, and even, you know, shut it down. Don't grab that controller. I see what you're doing over there. Do something analog, like go to the beach or even a lake if you don't live near a beach. It's actually a lot of fun to just hang out, read a book, and chill in the sunlight and burn.
You could use sunscreen, maybe go in the water occasionally.
I use sunscreen.
I'm mixed because, like, I love the fact that the boys are usually exhausted after a day at the lake, but I am also usually exhausted from keeping the boys from drowning on a day in a lake.
Oh, yeah, that would be fun. Use floaties. I use them. No, not really.
We'll talk about child water safety later. Oh, my goodness. I'm Patrick Norton.
I'm Shannon Morris.
We'll see you next week on Tech Thing. You want to play games?
Kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty responsive thingy.
It is cool.
I'm glad that there's no gigantic screen here.
It was such a...
I know, right?
Yeah. I still remember when they debuted it at CES. I was like, what? Is that like a 6-inch screen on top of a game controller?
I reviewed it a while, but I remember on another show I reviewed it, and I felt so bad, but I was just like,
all the inconvenience of the tablets, all the irritation of a remote.
I like this though. GPUs and this, bud.
This is much smarter though. I actually like Android TV a lot.
I really want to stick my coupons inside of this. Wow, it's heavy. Oh, never mind. That's just cables.
No. It's actually heavy without the cables.
Is it?
Yeah. Here, I will hold the cables.
Okay, thanks. Whoa.
Yeah.
Jeez.
I think it probably is a huge.
It's as heavy as my cat.
I don't know if it's that heavy.
My cat's really fat.
Oh, there it is.
She is. She's terribly.
Learn about your shield.
How do I turn it on?
Hit the big green button at the top.